do my cheesy intro, and we'll get started. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the BAMF Podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty, and here today with Cynthia Miller and Norbert Franz of Spectrum Games. How you guys doing?
Hello,
pretty
Mike.
Good.
Doing well. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. And Norbert is joining us from Bavaria, right?
That's right. I'm in the northern portion of Bavaria in Germany.
So special thanks to Norbert for joining us at like 10 o'clock his time. So definitely appreciate that. And you guys are here to talk about Dun-Dun-Dun Cartoon Action Hour, which has just had a wildly successful Kickstarter. And why don't we start off with Kickstarter? Tell us what's going on there.
Well, it wrapped up just the other day, and we were originally looking for $4,500 as a minimum goal. We were scared we would barely get that, or if at all.
Mm-hmm.
We got that after a little over 27 hours, which shocked us all, I think. And so then we proceeded to unlock stretch goal after stretch goal until 21 of them. Wasn't that right, Norbert? 21?
21 is the number of stretch goals that we met, right?
Right. And so we ended up with $18,600 and some dollars, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. So you guys are a really Kickstarter success story. How do you feel about that? You blown away, or is this kind of what you were expecting? Because you guys have been around for a while. You've got a very active fan base I've seen online.
Yeah, we were surprised. We did hope for this, obviously, but I don't know that we expected it for sure. It was a nice surprise.
Yeah, this was our second attempt at using Kickstarter. But the first time we used it was late last year, October, November, for a supplement for another game that we produced, which is the superhero game Capes, Cowls, and Villains Foul, written by Barack Blackburn.
Uh-huh.
And his design was, in fact, a hack, as they say, a variant of the Cartoon Action Hour rules.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we released the rulebook for that in August last year, and then that we just did on our own without any crowdfunding, and then we first tried Kickstarter for this first supplement for that game, and I moved it on to the new edition of Cartoon Action Hour.
Okay. Hey, I've heard a lot of good things about that Capes, Cowls, and Villains Foul. That great credit is quite a splash when it came out.
Yes, it did. We were happy with it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I want to say very happy, too. It's a game that keeps surprising me and allowed me to have very cool game sessions. And I just ran it on Saturday for two people at a con.
Yes, we were afraid initially because there were a lot of superhero games coming out that year. You had Marvel Heroic and so forth and so on. And right around the same time, we knew that there was a new edition of Mutants and Masterminds. So we were... Well, I can't speak for everyone, but I was a little worried that maybe, we would kind of get lost in the shuffle with Capes, Cowls, and Villains Foul, but that didn't appear to be the case, and it became a very high-moving product for us.
Yeah, there's been kind of a rash or bumper crop or surge, but just a ton of superhero games lately.
Mm-hmm.
With the new edition of Mutants Masterminds, Icons, Bash...
Exactly.
Yeah. You guys, what kind of support are you guys planning for Cape Cal and Villain Foul? Just curious.
Well, we have a bunch of adventures in the pipeline, and there's some other tentative things that Barack has discussed wanting to do, and we've ruminated, but I can't really elaborate on any of those yet because nothing is set in stone, and I hate to get anybody's hopes up, but we have some pretty interesting things planned.
Okay, well, that's exciting but cryptic, so that's cool. So, Cartoon Action Hour, congrats on the great success of your Kickstarter. And as you mentioned a little bit before the podcast started, you guys, you've been around for a while kind of building your audience and getting your message out there. Could you talk a little bit about how Cartoon Action Hour evolved from Season 1 to Season 2 and what brought you to the Kickstarter?
Sure, we can do that.
Mm-hmm, sure. Season 1 was a very traditional style RPG. And don't get me wrong, I'm still very proud of how it turned out, but I felt almost immediately that it could have been done a lot better. You know, you had the list of traits, you had, you know, a very detailed way to build powers, and you had through things called components, that you would basically take components to build your powers with. And so that was the first edition.
Okay. And so how did second edition? Second edition kind of came out of that initial frustration that you should have done different things, or?
Yes, it really did. And when we first started the development for season two, I think Norbert can attest to this, we were kind of all over the board on what we wanted to do
also,
with it.
It also took a long time. You know, there was that considerable period, I think, 2004, 2005, when Spectrum Games, I think, business-wise, didn't do a lot, or we didn't get new product out. But we kept discussing the rules and made characters, you know, made some suggestions, you know, exchanged suggestions and ideas for how we wanted to make the rules better, or simplify certain things. And I think 2005, we first started compiling ideas for a second edition. And it still took till Halloween of 2008 to make it and to produce it as a full book, you know, with art.
Yes.
And layout and everything.
It was our first actual self-published work, so there was a pretty big learning curve. Prior to that, we had only gone through Z-Man Games, and by this point, we had broken off, And so there was a lot that we had, you know, to learn in order to make season two really happen. And so that added to some of the time.
What kind of things did you have to learn?
Well, how to do everything. I mean, honestly, we didn't know anything about graphic design. I mean, we didn't know the steps in making it available. You know, we just knew how to put up a PDF on DriveThru/RPG Now. We had no idea about any of the other stuff. Art directing, I mean, I dabbled in some of that. Z-Man Games kind of gave us a nice amount of leeway on that. So I at least dipped my toes into that. But really, we were kind of going into it blind, so even today, I'm pretty shocked that it came out as well as it did. I had also gone to graphic design, or to college for graphic design during that point. So by 2008, I was, you know, able to lay out a book and do my own logos and such. So that really helped.
Okay, cool. So you talked about kind of the frustration with season one, but to do season two. What was the inspiration to go into season three?
Oh. Again, the feeling that we could do things a little more streamlined. Over the years, we've garnered a little bit of a reputation for genre emulation, being able to accurately bring to life whatever genre we're going after through game mechanics alone. And so I think that we've all learned a lot since season two, believe it or not. And so we just wanted to make it better, faster, more streamlined, and so forth.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think also, Cynthia, you told me that you had got a lot of feedback from the fans, you know, and
yes.
You read very carefully what people had posted on RPG.net, I believe, on the forum, and just listened
Absolutely.
To what people were saying.
One of the big criticisms of season one especially, and season two even quite a bit, was the duration and complexity of character creation. There's a lot of those traditional point systems put in place, and so we wanted to take that down, because a lot of people are like, well, this is just a fun little one-shot game, you know, for a lot of us, so nobody wants to spend 30 minutes or however long making a character. So with this edition, you can make him... Oh, Norbert's our master character creator, so I'll let him give a time estimate here on how long it takes.
Right, yeah. I mean, I also went back and revised characters that I'd had in mind, and I looked at, you know, all kinds of characters from animated shows that I was watching, and even newer shows and other things that I discovered on the internet or that friends had recommended. And every now and then I would really like one of those characters. You know, this could be a hero or maybe a robot or a villain or any kind of character from one of those shows. And then I would try to make that character in Cartoon Action Hour. And this goes back to when we had the first edition out. And then, of course, you know, season two required rethinking in that rule system, and it made a lot of things simpler. When you have any sort of point distribution, you buy your things, or all your things initially with points, that usually allows for a great range of things and a lot of leeway. You know, you want to have a stronger ability or a head start at the beginning, or you have a special power here or a disadvantage there. And when you have players who will question every one of those decisions or try to, you know, get just a little something extra for 1 point or 2 points from a total of maybe 30 points for a hero, that allowed for discussions. And then, you know, with some players, you know, a character discussion could take a little bit longer. And now I sat down for the playtest of season three, and Cynthia sent out this great playtest document that's got all the core rules and character creation, and that was like the most recent version that I used. And that really took, you know, my favorite parts of the season two rules and made them even better and made them even simpler for new people. And now with those, I've created some of my favorite heroes and also some obscure characters. And I did them in, I think, 3 to 5 minutes, writing everything down. And then for a more complicated character, you know, up to 10 minutes, but it shouldn't take longer than that.
Okay.
Yeah. And also with character creation in the new edition, before we probably move on to something else, I would like to point out that we've done away with all but the barest minimum of point juggling. There's very little point allocation involved now. It's more about just choosing options. You choose options, you put them in, and you end up with your character.
That's right. Also, the first thing you decide on is star power. And then your star power will be a number between 1 and 4. I think player characters will usually have 3 or 4. And that number tells you a whole lot of things that you need in-game and in character creation. For example, you would get 3... specialties, right? Special rules. If your star power is 3, now the guy with star power 4 gets to select 4 of those special rules. And a special rule in this version of the game is simply an add-on that will enhance an ability or a power.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm just talking about the subject matter. Can you give me an example of an 80s cartoon character who would have, say, 4 star powers, opposed to one who would have 3 or 2?
I think I know where Norbert's going to say on this one. Go ahead.
We chose star power 4 as the maximum. The scale only goes to a 4 so far.
And the He-Man.
We reserved that for characters that the series is named after.
Okay.
Also, I think Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends tells you right there that, of course, Spider-Man would have more screen time, and people would tune in for Spider-Man. And we've got those two other guys.
And also Black Star,
mm-hmm.
Brave Star, etc. They would have 4.
Yeah, and it's Gem and the Holograms, but the show is called Gem.
So Gem's a 4 and the Holograms is 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Now, the Transformers.
You what? I couldn't hear you.
I was just saying, so Gem would be a 4 and Holograms are a 3.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can still hear you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, hey.
It got all staticky.
That happens sometimes. It's the vagaries of broadcasting over the internet. Hey, Transformers. Right. Who would be a 3, who would be a 4? Or are they all 3s?
All of them would be 3s in my mind. Some people might disagree with that. Some people might give Optimus a 4, Megatron a 4. But if I were running it, I would put them all at 3.
Okay, well, that's cool. Well, I wanted to mention your guys, the aesthetic you guys have in terms of art and layout. You really seem to capture, at least what I've seen in the previous books, and just the art Kickstarter on the art on the Kickstarter. You really seem to capture that sort of feel of 80s cartoons, and that's something I've always really enjoyed about your guys' products is you really find a way to emulate that kind of a vibe. I'm guessing you guys are both big fans of that genre.
Oh yes.
Okay, can you guys go through and tell me maybe what your favorite shows are and what elements of that you've tried to take into the game?
Well, the trick is we've tried to incorporate elements from just about every show of the genre. When I was first putting together the playtest document that I sent Norbert, a friend of mine, Eric Hudson, and I, we went and watched a lot of different retro tunes, and we made extensive notes. And I'd already done this whole process before, but this was more extensive. Every aspect of every little TV show of the era, the cartoon, I should say, and then would figure out how to implement it both visually and game mechanic wise. But my personal favorite cartoon ever is Thundar the Barbarian. I adore that show with a burning passion.
I am right there with you. And hey, I was looking at your first updates. You got an update of a guy in a loincloth with a stop sign as a shield fighting off some lizard man. I'm guessing that's a Thundar homage. So, cool.
Yes.
Norbert, how about you?
Well, growing up in the 80s also, I was a fan of Masters of the Universe. And then in my mid-20s, I first went on the internet, and one of the first websites I went to was He-Man.org. And then I got in touch with the He-Man collector scene and the people who were writing fan fiction and all that. And there was this mailing list of the He-Man and She-Ra fans discussing stuff, and that mailing list was where I first got in contact with Cynthia. Mm-hmm. That's how we met, and then I had this great opportunity to contribute to a game that was mostly inspired by He-Man and She-Ra and then other shows of that era, and then, of course, most people who watched He-Man and then the other Filmation shows will know Brave Star and Thundercats. Thundercats are like for the characters, for the aesthetics. A great theme song, great atmosphere to it. Mask, probably. At least the first season was a good vehicle-driven show. I didn't get into Transformers much, but now, retroactively, I'm learning bits and pieces about Transformers. G.I. Joe also was not on television in Germany, but now I know the basics of G.I. Joe. Cynthia has all the expert knowledge.
Yeah, I'm G.I. Joe-aholic, especially the comic book, though I have learned to appreciate the cartoon more in more recent years. I started with the comic book. That was my first exposure to the modern G.I. Joe. By modern, I mean 80s. Mm-hmm. And so, when I saw the cartoon, which was, a lot more geared toward kids than the comics was, I was very disappointed, but it's grown on me a lot over the years. There's some really well-written episodes.
There were some guys who were pretty top-flight comic book writers at the time who wrote some episodes of G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that it didn't show in Europe. I didn't think that would have much appeal outside of the U.S.
In fact, two of the people who have written a lot of these shows are doing mini series books for us.
Really?
For, yeah, they were stretch goals. Buzz Dixon and Flint Dill.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Cool, cool. Well, hey, so quick question. When will Season 3 be available to the unwashed masses if it didn't pledge to Kickstarter?
Oh, that's kind of tricky. In fact, we're discussing the exact date of that, so I hate to be cryptic again, but I'm going to have to say TBA.
You know, that's actually just smart, because you get in trouble giving dates that you don't end up meeting later, so yeah.
Right, right.
So, all right, well, that's totally cool. I guess the next thing I'm wondering is, you guys don't have any way people can get in after the, I mean, there's sometimes publishers will, you know, finagle people in after the fact on Kickstarters. Do you guys have any kind of program like that, or pretty much the end has passed, so you're out of luck, fellas?
Right, yeah.
Okay, all right, that's cool. However, definitely people can still check out Crouch in Action Hour Season 1 and 2, which are both available on RPG Now. And, where will folks go to get more information so they can find out, you know, when it's going to come out and, you know, be updated on the process and whatnot?
Well, we have our website, which is spectrum-games.com.
Uh-huh.
We have... On there, we have the Cartoon Action Hour Season 3 Primer,
mm-hmm.
which gives all the nuts and bolts of the current system. It's a free download, and it's hosted by Cargore and Brave Steel, which have become fan favorites over the years. As far as that, we're also very active on Facebook. So, and that's facebook.com/SpectrumGames.
Okay. Spectrum Games, all one word? Facebook?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, this is really nifty. Like I say, I've been a fan of what you guys have been doing for a long time. And notice something about Spectrum Games fans is, I mean, you get folks who are really, really devoted to what you do. And when I talk to people who are into your games, I get a lot of, I would say respect, because you guys do a lot of designing in the open, a lot of blogging about your design decisions, and when you scratch something, go back to formula and build it back up. And to talk to a lot of folks who've noticed you doing that over the years, I've been really impressed with your thoroughness and your dedication to getting things just so.
That's so very flattering.
Well, it's a good reputation you've been building for yourself. You should be proud of that. So,
thank you.
Definitely look forward to picking up Season 3 when it comes out. Anything else you want to tell the listeners before we wrap it up?
I would kind of like to plug a couple other products that we're going to be working on.
Sure.
One is going to be, and again, TBA on this, but is RetroStar. It's the role-playing game that emulates the 1970s-era science fiction television shows, a la the old Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, Space 1999, so forth and so on. And it'll even go into the KidVid-type stuff, like Ark 2 and Land of the Lost, whatever. If it's science fiction and was on television... It's going to be emulated by this game, and there will be a Kickstarter for that.
Yes, and I'm working on a series for that, which is probably going to be in the book.
And it's brilliant.
Well, that's really exciting news. Speaking as a child of the 80s, I'd love to see something that could do 1970s Battlestar Galactica or Buck Rogers. Because those shows were cheesy, but I loved them when I was 9 and 10. So.
Yeah, also those franchises still got a big fan base each, and... I just learned that there are comic book series, based on the license that are published now.
Actually, Dan Abnett and Annie Lanning, who have done a lot of work on the cosmic side of Marvel, are writing, I think it's for Dynamite Comics, they're doing a 1970s Battlestar Galactica series right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I actually had Abnett on the podcast last year, a really interesting fellow. But, it's kind of weird how that worked out. Sort of like the TV rights went with one company and the movie rights went with somebody else. I think the comic that they're doing over at Dynamite is under the aegis of the Battlestar Galactica movie rights, which is a different company than the TV rights for that the recent.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's legal and technical and whatnot. Hey, speaking of reboots, Robert, as a He-Man fan, what do you think of? There've been a couple of attempts in the last decade or so to bring back Masters of the Universe. Were you basically impressed with either one of them?
I was glad that it came back. You know, I remember I went to toy stores and department stores in 2003 and picked up most of the 2003 era action figure series. After a while I got interested in a bunch of other things and didn't didn't really concentrate on toy collecting. Also, they're too pricey. It was good to see that there was a continuation of something that I liked from the 80s, and the fan community was just spectacular. And let's see, I'm mainly focused on role-playing games and comic books. I bought the Masters of the Universe classic He-Man and Beast-Man, like the first two that were released. And then right around that time, I didn't have a day job, and so money was very tight, and that didn't allow me to continue collecting that line, but I saw those figures and some of the new art. What about Maddie Collector and all that? Right now, I'm reading the DC Entertainment comic book, which has been around for a few months. Keith Giffen wrote the latest issue, and that is He-Man and the Masters of the Universe all over again, in probably the classic version of the classic design, but they change the continuity, and also that is a different continuity from the one that they put on the toy packaging, and very different from the 80s cartoon. So right now you have actual bloodshed and violence, and they put Adora in sort of a Darth Vader armor, like she has the Hordak armor in that. It's still cool to see the more freeform variations of that series. And if there is ever a big He-Man motion picture, I'm all for that.
They're supposed to be doing that, actually.
A grand movie with we actually see Battle Cat and a good version of Skeletor and a good version of the Evil Warriors.
You'll notice I didn't mention the previous movie adaptation.
Yeah, less said the better, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So, hey, yeah, just a quick question. Maybe you guys get this already, but do you guys ever consider doing? I know there's a huge My Little Pony fan club, which it would seem like would be right up your alley. I've never seen you guys really address that particular genre. Any interest in you guys in something like that, or not so much?
Actually, that's something we've kind of danced around with. That the more younger kid type cartoons, we've danced around with that idea a little bit here and there.
Smurfs, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the question.
Okay, kind of a back burner, maybe possibility one day kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, cool. Well, hey, so
we could mention Gen Con in that context because. We have our game events for Gen Con this year. They are online by now, and I think also on a forum thread on RPG.net. And then Ellie wants to run a game which is using pony characters.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Ellie Hillis is another member of Spectrum Games.
Okay, and that's a game you guys are running at Gen Con. People can jump into if they want.
If it's not already filled up.
Where would they find out about that? At Gen Con website or your website, or where would they go?
Yeah, you can find it on the Gen Con website. You'll have to look under the listing. Instead of Spectrum Games, you'll be looking up Harsh Realities. Mm-hmm. We're going in with them on a booth, and it was easier to just do it under one company masthead.
Mm-hmm. That's Scott Harshberger's company, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Scott's a friend. I've had him on the podcast a few times. He's done some art for me in the past. He's a good guy.
Yes, he's done art for us, and I'm doing graphic design for him right now. And yeah, good friend.
It's a small world.
Yes, it is.
Well, hey, Cynthia, Norbert, appreciate your guys' time. Thank you for coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you very much.
And for our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.